Talking Across the Lines, LLC, and the Southern Maryland Folklife Project are proud to present Born and Raised in Tobacco Fields. Portrait of a Changing American Landscape. Written by Carrie Noble Klein and Adam Nordell. After the tobacco harvest in Calvert County, amid the eternal ancestral chorus of crickets and cicadas, farmers find time to reflect on their lives, toiling in the hot Southern Maryland fields and tobacco barns, stripping sheds and warehouses. Production of tobacco, or sotweed as they called it then, dates to the founding of Calvert County 350 years ago. Suddenly, since a state-administered buyout was established in the year 2000, tobacco farming is virtually a thing of the past here. Yet those lingering images and landscapes have plowed deep furrows in local memory.
My name is James W. Diggs. I'm 68 years old. It all begins in the first part of the spring when my father and I, we used to clear the spot off to make a tobacco bed where we would plant our seeds. And then the plants would grow. We had to pick the grass out of the tobacco bed so it wouldn't suffocate the little tobacco plants. And then about middle of the last of May, we would start planting our tobacco. We had to prepare the land first. We had to plow the land and put fertilizer down. And we used to plant tobacco by hand with just two fingers and be bending down all day long planting tobacco. Once it was planted and began to grow, then we would have to cultivate the tobacco. We would do that with a weeding hoe. Then we had a cultivator, they used to call it, which would pull by a horse. And we'd go up each row to cultivate and keep the grass out of it. That was all summer. And then about the last part of July, first part of August, harvest time came. The tobacco would have what we call tops in it. And we had to go down each row and break these tops out of the tobacco. And then we would cut it and hang it in a barn. Let it cure. They called it curing. It would turn brown from green to brown. And then in the wintertime, we would strip it, put it in bundles. And then in the spring, Daddy would pack it down, what we call burdens. They'd pack it in a basket or pack it on a stick. And then carry it to the market and sell it in the spring.
My name is Helen I. Gray. I've been 90 years old. I was farming ever since I was around 5 or 6 years old. And we raised tobacco on the main lane. He could have and we could have. See, that's really what years back. And we didn't get nothing much then. Tobacco was penny a pound lot of tobacco. Nickel, quarter, for the best. Huh? Yep, be surprised. Come a long ways, honey. Long ways. Yeah.
I remember one time, no, I guess it was about 12, 13 maybe, something around there, very young. My daddy told me he wanted me to cultivate two fields of corn, and it was down in the bottom. You had to go over here down in the bottom. Very hot down in the bottom. It's in the summertime. And he said, James, if you don't play around, you can get both of those fields done in a day. So I started about 7:30 that morning down in the bottom of the cornfield. And I worked hard that day. I stopped and ate lunch and I went back. It was extremely hot that afternoon. And about 3 o'clock, the horse fell. And I couldn't get the horse up. And Daddy came home from work. I told him that the horse had fallen. I couldn't get him off the ground, so he went down. We got him up. The horse died that night because I worked him too hard. And my dad was quite upset with me because we sharecropped and we lived on the white man's farm. And we lived in his house, so whatever we grew, we had to give him half. When we grew our tobacco and sold tobacco, he would get half or whatever price we got for the tobacco because we lived on his farm. And the animal belonged to him. The horse was his horse. So my daddy had to pay him $25 for the horse. And my daddy was quite upset with me. Said I could at least rest the horse. And I said to myself, what about me? I said, why didn't you take a rest? But he was more interested in the man's horse than he was in me, where it seemed to me.
My name is Lindsay Wilson Reed. I was a backer farmer. I share crop for God all my life, you know, work and give the landlord half. And then God worked with, said, Lindsay, why don't you stop farming?
My name is Franklin Wood, and I still love the smell of diesel smoke. I plowed some this morning. The new earth plowing is a wonderful smell.
My name is Judith Thal Levitt. The tobacco was that's how we made it. That's how my dad made it. It was the number one money-making crop, and actually it still is. And I'm really mixed about seeing it go. I know that there are problems with it, but when it's a part of your life, it's kind of hard to see it vanish.
I can see my grandpa working in the fields in the days before they had rubber on the wheels. Oh, so much has changed since then, there's too much going on. Years like pinwheels in the wind, they spin and then they're gone. Grandpa was a country man, he saw things with his heart. He could take the tall oak tree and turn it into art. Now those days passed us by and storm clouds gathered dark. Other hands across the land where once our farm had started.
My name is Dr. Christine Bergmark. I'm the director for the Southern Maryland Agricultural Development Commission. One of the things that I've learned through working on this program is the steep tradition of tobacco. It's a part of the culture. It's a part of the society. It's a part of the economy of Southern Maryland. And it's steeped. It's a deep, deep, deep tradition. And it's not something that can be just changed overnight. It's not something that even a tobacco buyout, as the state is offering, can change overnight, because it is a culture.
Getting up and going to tobacco fields, cutting and working and making it yield, it was hard work. I worked till I hurt. Felt those muscles up under my shirt. I'm a southern son, born and raised in tobacco fields, cutting that tobacco, watching time pass under them wheels, passing on out of sight. Southern son, there ain't no reason to call me something I ain't. This late in the season, life spills over the day.
My name is David Conrad. My title is Extension Regional Tobacco Specialist with Maryland Cooperative Extension of the University of Maryland. First year that I raised tobacco in 1979 was the tobacco blue mold year. First year that we had seen the blue mold organism in quite some time I raised tobacco for 17 years and made money every year.
My name is John Prouty. Tobacco was really a big deal when I was growing up. My earliest memories of being involved in it were when I was 4 or 5 and, you know, riding up to the market or watching them load tobacco.
What's your name?
Tanner, Butch Tanner. My grandpa helped build this farm, these warehouses. Back years ago, it ain't like it was now. This place stay open 2-3 months a year. We'd stay here from 7:30 in the morning till sometimes 11 o'clock at night. Unloading trucks.
Gilbert Buddy Bowling, Sr. This particular building was built in 1938 while they started construction. They had a sawmill right here. The first auction was in 1939. With the tobacco buyout, it was a mental strain for me. It took a while for me to accept the fact that tobacco is no longer the king. The volume has gone from 24, 30 million down to, well, this year we'd be lucky to have 2.5. When I ride around the Southern Maryland area and see field and field of grain and no tobacco, it's telling a story that's hard to believe.
Standing there staring at the good old times, how they all seem bittersweet like wine. He seemed always in his days, soon like a he's a Southern son, born and raised.
My name is S.L. Brady. All I wanted to do when I was little was be on one of these tractors around here when it was moving. Been around this stuff all my life. It's what I wanted to do.
My daddy used to hire me out, and we would work all day long, either picking tobacco beds or cultivating fields or whatever we had to do for this particular white man. And he would pay me sometimes 50 cents a day. I think the highest I ever got was $1 a day. And I can remember so vividly that one morning, I was going to do some work for a man, and when I arrived at his house, he told me, he said, boy, go down in the barn and hook up the 2 mules, and I want you to go back down in the backfield and cultivate the cornfield. And I can remember walking from his house down to the barn, and before I arrived at the barn, I could hear the mules kicking each other and making a lot of noise. And I was afraid to go into the barn to get the mule because I was afraid the mule was going to kick me. So I went back up to the house and told the man that I was afraid to go in there where the mules were. And he cursed me and told me that none of them so-and-so mules wasn't going to hurt me, go down there and hook the mule up. But I went home and I told my mother, and she said, well, don't worry about it, you don't have to go back. And Daddy was quite upset, but Mom was good. She protected me a lot. But I would never forget that. He was very mean. He was a nasty man. I didn't like for him to call me boy. He had a tendency to call us boy or niggas at that time, and I didn't care for that.
My name is Cassandra Briscoe. I didn't actually, as a child, work in the tobacco, particularly the men who grew up in the tobacco fields. Probably feel more strongly about it because I observed it from inside my house sipping lemonade when I was a child.
Everybody had their own farms. They worked on their own farms, and everybody had to do their own cutting, harvest, and planting, and everything. Had to do that themselves. The only time they really came together was in November when it was hog killing time. And maybe two or three of the neighborhood get together with Grandpa and my dad and kill hogs, and they just kill maybe 15, 16 hogs.
If you go north on Maple Road, you'll come across two Methodist churches right next door to each other. They both have cemeteries, and the cemeteries meet down in a ravine, a shallow ravine. They're both United Methodist churches, which of course begs the question of what the heck is going on here. The simple answer is one is historically white and one is historically black. They began as a single congregation, and on the eve of the Emancipation Proclamation, the African-American Methodist Episcopalian worshipers were granted the authority to form their own conference. It was the all-black Washington Conference of the Methodist Episcopal Church. The white conference was the Baltimore Conference. They reunited not until the 1960s. It is now called the Baltimore-Washington Conference of the United Methodist Church. But the congregations are historically separate. That black congregation built its first building in 1867 on land donated by the same man who had donated the land for the white church. They've shared really very little ever since. The driveways are separate. And whoever mows, they don't hire the same groundskeeper, you know. So in summertime, that's where you get a clue where one cemetery ends and the other begins, because the grass is always at different heights. There's this kind of diagonal line in the grass between one property and the other. But there's a whole lot to be learned if you walk through the cemeteries. Some of the names are the same. And you can go off into the land around and find the descendants of many of them, both black and white, sometimes in the same family.
Pretty much with my dad when I was growing up. I'd help him in the stripping room to hand the tobacco to him so he could put it in the burdens. There's times with my dad were very special times.
My dad worked the farm for 60 years before he died. But even before that day, I look at him and cry, 'cause I knew he'd never had that much and probably never would. But now I see he had more than a man now ever could. Back when times were good and times were bad, daylight would fade always be glad to get back to our pillows and dream of where we'd go to find a better way, a little brighter day, just to find the best times we ever had
was out of Dad between the rows.
Didn't want any of us to work on the farm. He just encouraged all of us to get outside jobs. He says, look at these hands. I don't want your hands to look like this. But he was one of the hardest working men I ever knew, and I respected him so much for that.
Just to find the best times we ever had
was out of Dad between the rows.
I remember my dad saying, get up this morning, son.
Oh, my name is Buddy Hance. You know, we had these greenhouses. They were already here. We were growing our tobacco plants in greenhouses. So the progression to flowers was fairly easy for us. The buyout was really just icing on the cake, because we were going anyway. I mean, there were days there in the end, in the summer, we were cutting tobacco, and it'd be the three of us and some black ladies in the neighborhood that helped us, and none of them were under 60. That's pretty scary. when your future is dependent on three people, senior citizens, to do the kind of work we were doing.
Years ago, you could pay a couple dollars a day to cut tobacco and give them a meal. Now you got to pay $10, $15 a day plus buy them the meal. It was 17 cents a stick to strip tobacco. I don't know how much it is now. Probably up to a quarter now.
H-C-1. That business of, you know, one day you walk in there, it's $1.80, $1.80, $1.80, $1.80. Come back 2 days later, it's $1.45, $1.45, $1.45 for the same tobacco. And then maybe the first day you go in and they're not feeling all that good, and instead of $1.80, they say $1.60, $1.60, $1.60 on yours. Well, maybe you could fold your ticket, reject it, come back and sell it and get the $1.80 the next day. But maybe the next time yours went back on the auction, it was $1.45. That, more than anything, even more than the labor, that just drove me crazy, that uncertainty. It was up and down, and it up and down from week to week or even day to day. So I think even more than scarce labor, that was something that made me very willing to take the buyout.
The market for this year is worse than last year. Way worse. And I thought I would take a death from my price. So I wouldn't take it this year. I wouldn't smile when I felt like crying. It'd be a bad feeling to go home to. Knowing what you got for it, what you got into it. Between your labor, your fertilizer, your time, your fuel for your tractor, and everything else. You figured all that, and a little bit of money that you do get, you hope you bring yourself above water. But a lot of them don't make it. That's why a lot of them now ain't doing it no more, I guess.
But a lot of the houses done closed down now. Even up in Marlboro, they done closed most of them down.
They've done us common. The tobacco companies have stole tobacco from the Southern Maryland tobacco farmer for years, finding anything they could wrong with it for as a reason to cut the price on it. But cigarette prices, they always stayed the same. Yeah, they've done us common. There's no getting around it.
Now those days passed, the spying storm clouds gathered dark. Other hands across the land where once our farming started.
I'm here talking about the sickening council, this and council that. They said cigarette. But here, people are just dying and have cancer, never smoked in their life. Huh? See, years back, we didn't have that poison put on our crop. Now, everybody been using it. That's farming. It's true, isn't it? It's true. If you put it on top of the ground, when the rain comes, where is it going? In the ground. Everything that we got is poison in it. Even your drinking water.
Not a farmer's or somebody else's problem is kids smoke cigarettes. That's the parents.
The state of Maryland chose to use its portion of the master settlement and put it into what's called a cigarette restitution fund. Our Southern Maryland legislators at the time said, we'd like to help our farmers find a way to transition out of tobacco. After all, this has been their livelihood, and it's been a noble livelihood for them. And we're looking now to take that away. So our legislators argued to get a minimum of 5% of the cigarette restitution fund in Maryland to come back to the Southern Maryland farmers.
I think the governor in Virginia gives some of the tobacco farmers a right good cutout of the master settlement agreement as compensation for loss of market and income because of decline in cigarette sales. Well, we didn't have the right governor up here. They sent that proposal to him, and he point blank told him that he wasn't going to compensate nobody to grow tobacco. But then they come back and they put another option in front of us, a buyout. Get out. That's what he wanted. get out, quit growing it all together.
So. They mailed me a letter, and they mailed me three or four letters about it, and I wouldn't take it. And the crop I sold, I couldn't get no help, couldn't get nobody to help me draw a plant. No, I planted about an acre and a half. When July came, 4th July came, I quit.
Southern Maryland is the fastest growing area in the state of Maryland for development. And we're encouraging them to get out of tobacco. One of their recourses is to certainly turn around and to sell their land. So we wanted to be able to provide an incentive for farmers to not sell their land. Not a requirement, but an incentive. So that's the agricultural land preservation part of the program.
You can still sell that land and go out and rent 2 acres and plant 20 rows of sweet corn, fall 1040F.
We lost 370,000 acres of farmland in a decade to the 5 counties of Southern Maryland. All of us that are working with the Tobacco Crop Conversion Program are hoping that we don't lose our agricultural base.
The growing houses in the fields between the towns, and the starlight driving movies closing down. The road is gone to the way it was before, and the spaces won't be spaces anymore.
The small specialized organic type things might be a niche for some people. So we need to preserve those small places and not just let the developers include them into their development plans by cutting another street through the woods.
2 more farms were broken by the drought. First the Wagners, now the Fullers pulling now. Developers paid better than the corn. But this was not the place where they were born. It's houses in the fields, no prayers for steady rain this year. Houses in the fields, there's houses in the fields. The last few farms are growing out of here.
Old area I'm at now, but they didn't build it up now. There ain't no farm no more. 4 or 5 acres I got there, side of the road there, that food I was working back on, but that was a big farm. Oh, no, that was a big farm. Just only them 4 or 5 acres that he left me for a lifetime right on. That's the only thing I ain't got a house on, but the rest of it's all built up.
At first he wouldn't sell, and then he would. Now there'll be children playing where the silo stood. The word came from the marrow of his bones. It was the last sure way to pay off all the loans.
No, they're fussing about cigarette giving people counsel. And people just give up. That's why they're building up all these houses. People ain't working crop. You got to pay tax on your land. And you ain't making enough money. So you have to give it up. That's better than taxing. They can take me. One time all around was nothing but tobacco.
And I got 2 old dogs, rabbit dogs, 3 old rabbit dogs. But I think I went out last year with them dogs. I fed them dogs a whole year. And I think I went out 2 times and killed 2 rabbits. And I don't know what I feed them for. But actually, there's no place to hunt. People done build it up.
The new streets will be named for kings and queens, and a ransom will be paid for every castle's dream. The model sign is crested with a lion, and the farmers, they will have enough to die on. Houses
cows in the fields. No prayers for steady rain this year. Houses in the fields. There's houses in the fields. The last few farms are growing out of here.
The other thing that bothers me about the development is the forest end of it. I just heard not recently that 1 acre of trees removes 13 tons of pollutants from the air a year. And they went up here for the Huntingtown School and cleared 54 acres clear. Not a tree or bush left on it to put to school. That's right here at the intersection of Huntingtown where all this traffic is. So if you multiply 54 times 13, multiply that by the next 50 or 100 years, that's a lot of pollutants that we're going to eat.
The road is gone to the way it was before. Spaces won't be spaces anymore. No, the spaces won't be spaces anymore.